Hello, friends. This is your friend, Kent C. Dodds, and I'm joined by my friend, Titus Wormer. Say hi, Titus.
Hi, Kent.
Well, Titus, I did ask you to say hi, Titus, but that's okay. I'm just kidding. All right. So I am excited to chat with Titus. This is actually the first time I've seen Titus not in person, we're virtual, but basically. And it's just a pleasure to chat with Titus over the internet tubes. Yeah, I've been following you, Titus, for a couple of years on Twitter, following your stuff on GitHub. You're very active. Probably everybody listening has used software that has used your software if they haven't directly used your software. So I'm just really excited to talk with you about that. But before we get too far into this, I'd love for our audience to get to know you a little bit. So could you introduce yourself to us, please?
Yeah. Thanks for the introduction. I'm Titus. I live in Amsterdam, the Netherlands, and I do a lot of open source. And yeah, most people know me from my penguin avatar. So not a lot of people have seen me, how I like actually look. And probably also not a lot of people know about the work that I do, because a lot of it is very low level. So it's often in the things that you use, and those are used in other things. And yeah, so it's very low level stuff often, but it's used a lot. It's like, I think it's like 400, 500 GitHub repos, and a lot of packages come out of that, and those are downloaded, I think, right now at about 10 billion times a year.
Whoa.
We're used a lot, and very low level. And yeah, that's what I do.
That's awesome. Do you have a job? Like, do you make money?
I used to be a teacher, as in a professor, so I made courses.
Really?
And and I taught folks how to do front end and back end and data visualization and stuff like that. And I quit, I think, like November 2018. Or a bit later. Then we raised some money for open source on Open Collective to continue the work in open source, because it's just a lot of issues, open source. So it's a lot of work answering all those issues and still writing code, and then having a job that you also really enjoy, where you have a lot of students that are asking questions. And yeah, so that was a lot. And then we got some money in open source, and then you have some money in open source, and then you kind of need to use it. So, and we got, I think, like 20K in half a year, which is a lot of money, way more than like you can print stickers with, and that's a lot of stickers.
Yeah.
But it's also not really enough to live off, actually. Yeah, so in the last couple of years, I've been sometimes doing some freelancing, some contracting on top of my open source. And in other cases, recently Salesforce has actually paid me to work on an open source project that I was already working on, but I couldn't work on full time because I had to contract next to it. And then they were like, okay, what if you work full time on that new thing and we'll pay you for it? And that was great.
Cool.
More companies should do that. Yeah, that's awesome. And then now for the last half year, I'm kind of like living off of that. And now I'm almost broke, so I need to figure out something again. And yeah.
It sounds like it's a constant hustle.
Kinda, yeah. Well, I'm fortunate enough to live in Europe where security like is better, so I do have some health stuff, whereas in the US that's a bit worse. And I'm fortunate enough that I build a lot of important infrastructure, so companies do sometimes know me and reach out. And so, but it's also like only a couple of years, so we'll see what the future holds, but it's going okay for now.
Yeah, well, I know that like pretty much everybody who uses Gatsby is using your software. Maybe everybody. I don't know if they have Markdown parsing built in. I think they do. Pretty much everybody who has a developer blog is using Remark and Unified. So why don't you give us a little idea behind? Oh, and one other thing I wanted to mention is you do have a sponsors page on GitHub. So if anybody listening would like to sponsor you, I sponsor you. So there's opportunity there if you want to support a fellow developer or get your company to support. That would be even better. I'd love to hear for those who don't know about the Unified project and Remark and Rehype, and maybe they know those things, but they're not sure which is which. Could you give us a rundown? I know you said you had like 400 to 500 repos, so you don't have to tell us about all of them, but just kind of a lay of the land there.
It originally kind of started with Retext, and that's a natural language parser. And you give it a sentence and it'll split that sentence up into, okay, this is a paragraph. It has a couple of sentences, and those sentences have words and punctuation and symbols. And that was useful for spell checking or for readability checking. So lots of other things. And then I built Remark, and that's sort of the same idea, but then for Markdown. So it'll take Markdown document, it'll parse that into a syntax tree. So that's a representation so that computers can kind of understand what's going on.
And that's just like a big object.
A big JSON object, a tree structure. So, and tree here means that you have headings, and headings contain text, and you have code, and you have lots of things. And then later I made Rehype, and that's for HTML, so kind of a similar thing. So most of my work revolves around natural language and content. So modular like Lego bricks and layered like a cake. So if you don't like one piece, so for example, Remark, the Markdown parser, is too high level for you and you kind of don't like the interface, that's fine. You can use the underlying tools and you can combine all those tools with each other in different ways.
Yeah, and it's all very composable, and that's what makes that possible. And then there are even higher level tools, like there's the Gatsby Remark plugin and different things like that. I have a thing called MDX Bundler that composes some of these tools together too for bundling MDX. Actually, MDX is a interesting topic in itself. Do you want to talk about the origin stories of MDX and your role in that?
The MDX.js project is built on these tools. So it's one of the higher level projects and one of the highest level projects that I work on. And what it does is it parses kind of a mix between Markdown and JSX. You have your JSX, so you have your angle, your pointy brackets, and then you have H1, and you close those nicely. That's JSX, and that's really nice if you're going to do components. So if you're in React or Preact or whatever, then, you really enjoy components, right? So that's where JSX is great. But if you are going to do, like, paragraphs or strong, it's just a lot of typing to do all of those pointy brackets. And Markdown is much nicer, or a lot of people think it is, for paragraphs and strong and links and like those typical content things. And MDX allows like the combination of the two. So it has the terse Markdown syntax for most of the prose, most of the text, and then it has JSX for the components. And I think the idea was originally from Guillermo from Vercel, and a couple of other people had similar ideas, and that kind of became MDX, and then John Otander, he wrote the MDX.js project on top of Unified, so Remark and Rehype and those things, to actually make it into reality.
And it's awesome. Like I love using MDX because it's just as you described, it's the perfect marriage of content and interactivity, right? If you ever want to, and there's like MDX deck for slide decks that are interactive and stuff. So if you ever want to have content, but also interactive pieces in there, before, if you wanted to write your content in Markdown, then you'd have to put an iframe in there for something that's interactive, or maybe a div with an ID and then have JavaScript come in later or something. But MDX just made that a whole lot easier.
And to add, so I think like 2 months ago, I made a React Server Components demo on MDX. And React Server Components is something that Facebook is working on. And it's a really nice way to combine like static things with interactive things and splitting those bundles so that one part is running on the server and it's already like, it's pre-rendered, it's like sent to the client, and then only those interactive components are sent with it to update things. And that also works really well when combined with MDX. So MDX is already cool, and I think this will make it even cooler.
Yeah, for real. It's outrageous. I don't know if like regular content creators are still using WYSIWYGs or if they're like people are starting to author things in Markdown. But for me, I love writing things in Markdown, and I think it's just a really nice way to express that sort of content in general. It's just really nice and terse. And I know that what ends up being generated isn't just like weird divs and spans all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, Markdown is also, so like we're developers and we really love Markdown and also JSX, but there are some people, like normal people, that like are pretty confused by Markdown, so the image syntax is kind of annoying. So I'm not sure if it works for everybody in the world, but it works really well for developers. And I've also recently set up a pipeline where you have a giant Markdown document and it's turned into books. So it's turned into beautiful digital on the web books, but also EPUBs and Kindle and even print books. So it's automatically like laid out in a beautiful, they're really cool.
Wow.
Company's awesome. Called Holloway, by the way. So check it out if you, if you're interested in that. They have some. They're kind of a modern publisher, and they're tiny, but they have some cool books.
What was the company called again?
Holloway.
Holloway. Cool. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
And the reason I wanted to mention it is that they work with like editors and authors, and you can learn people the Markdown syntax in like an hour. Like it may not work for your dad or like for name a random person, but like an editor or an author could learn this syntax of Markdown. And
that's awesome. So you said there are 400 to 500 repos for the whole Unified organization. I'm guessing that they're more than just those three projects. So like what makes up the majority of those repos?
So you kind of have the main projects of these 9 ecosystems. So you have Markdown, you have HTML, you have natural language, you have a couple of others, MDX is one. And then there are, and so you have those main projects in each organization, and then there are lot of plugins. So I'm not sure how many we maintain of the Remark plugins, but that's probably like 50. And then I think in total there may be like 150 on GitHub, but I haven't really looked at this recently. We maintain a few. And under those plugins are utilities, and that's also about 120 of them. And then there are even lower level things sometimes. So there are list of HTML tags that are known, or a list of CSS vendor prefixes, for example. And these are like tiny modules, but they sometimes change, and I don't want to update like all my manual list of HTML element names in a lot of projects. So those are like in a separate package, and then you update one and it bubbles through the whole ecosystem.
Got it. Yeah. Sounds like a lot to manage. So these plugins, I'm curious to dive deeper into that. What do plugins do that Remark doesn't do by itself?
So Remark basically doesn't do anything. these ecosystem tools, Remark, Rehybridex, they do the following. They take a document, text, they parse it into a syntax tree. Then there are a lot of plugins, and then they serialize that syntax tree back into text. In some cases, it doesn't end up as text, but it's going to React elements or some other things. But that's the typical case, and that's all these projects do. And plugins do everything in between. And plugins can inspect or can transform content. So they can look at, okay, here is emphasis and it's using an asterisk. Okay, here is emphasis and it's using an underscore. You should use one character for these things, just be consistent. So that's checking, but it can also generate stuff. So it can, so that's the transforming. So it could find like all the heading structure in your Markdown document, and then find, okay, here's a heading called table of contents, and then it'll inject a nice table of contents there. Or a lot of stuff can happen. Basically anything can happen in plugins.
All your dreams can come true. Remark plugins kind of serve the same role as Babel plugins, or even ESLint plugins. You can do linting and things just for Markdown and HTML, right?
Yeah, and I think Unified here is different than the other ones, because for Markdown and HTML, Unified allows one pipeline that does everything. Whereas in the JavaScript world, you have Babel for transforming things, you have ESLint for checking and formatting things, and there's Prettier, of course, as well. There's Terser to minify JavaScript. So these are all separate projects that all have to parse and then transform and then serialize. And if you do those steps a lot, you lose time. And I think Unified here is doing it properly, in that it allows all these things on that syntax tree and only parses at the start and serializes at the end.
Yeah, I know that Sebastian McKenzie's working on Rome, and he's going to do lots of the same thing. So yeah, having it only parsed, and when we say parsed, that's taking it from the text that you write into this big JSON object that is a tree structure, and that process, and then you take that tree structure that maybe your plugins have modified or something, and then you stringify it or serialize it back into text. Yeah. And Babel does this. ESLint never stringifies it. Well, I guess they do, yeah, because they have their autofix and stuff. Yeah. And then Remark does this. But Remark allows you to not only transform, but also lint the output.
Yeah. And, well, I never tried minifying Markdown. That might be possible. Not sure if people need such a tool. But for HTML, that works as well. And I think one part that I didn't add before is that these are like separate JSON structures, separate trees, one for Markdown, one for HTML, but it's also possible to transform from one to the other, so that you have your Markdown and turn it into an HTML syntax tree without having to serialize in between. And the inverse is also true, so you can have your HTML and turn it into Markdown, and same with natural language. And I'm also adding recently some more things around XML, and also doing some work on JavaScript syntax trees. And there are other people have made org mode, which is kind of an alternative to Markdown, similar ecosystems on these tools.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So I'll just mention a couple of the plugins that I've done, because making plugins is, it's both easier and harder than you think. I think it's mostly easier than people think. For me, when I was starting to get into abstract syntax trees, just the name abstract syntax trees scared me. But once I got into it, I realized there was more to it than I thought, but it wasn't as magic as I thought. So for some Remark plugins that I've done, I have one on my site that automatically turns any Amazon link to an affiliate link. So it just adds the affiliate tag on there. It does the same for any Egghead link that I have on my site. So that's really nice. So I don't have to remember to add that all the time. It's just added automatically for me. And when I moved from medium.com to my own website, one thing that I really missed about Markdown versus Medium editor was I could take a URL for something, I could paste it in a Medium article and just hit enter, and it would embed. It was magical. And I didn't have to go click around, find the iframe code or whatever. And so I made a plugin that did exactly that. I just take the URL, I'd stick it in my Markdown. That's all I had to do. And then my plugin would turn that into the embed code. And sometimes you have to make a request, like for Twitter, for example, you make a request to get what the embed code would be for a particular tweet or something. And so the benefit of that is you get SEO juice from other people's tweets. And so because it's all rendered at build time. And so it shows up in the HTML that comes back. My site's a Gatsby site right now, moving over to Remix. But anyway, so that was another one that's really useful. And that one actually has turned into a much bigger project called Remark and Better, which people should check out. So that's another cool one. I've got another one where I transform my Cloudinary images. Any image that is hosted on Cloudinary, I'll add different transforms to it so that it's optimized for my website and stuff, because they have all sorts of really cool transforms you can add. So I don't have to worry about adding those myself. I just, here's the link, and then it gets transformed for me automatically. So yeah, lots of really cool things that you can do just for your own use cases. Like I haven't published most of these. They're just like little things that I add to where I compile my MDX stuff. And most of them are just like 15 lines of code. It's not that much. So are there any other like interesting use cases that you've seen of people building plugins with Unified?
Yeah, so many. There are so many cool ideas. It's sometimes like look through the code, and there's a lot of hits on GitHub for this code, so it's a lot to sift through. But it's just really cool to see like tiny plugins that people wrote themselves to do fun stuff. Like, yeah, just a lot of examples. I don't have anything off the top of my head.
Yeah. There's about a bajillion. If you check on NPM, like find all the dependents. Yeah, like people publish this stuff. But like I said, like one of the coolest things about plugins isn't the ability to publish them, but actually it's the ability to just make a short 15 line thing that just makes your life a little easier when you're creating this content. I haven't tried any linting or anything like that for my stuff, but I imagine that would probably be a really useful feature if I had other content writers. And you even have stuff like, I think this is for retext maybe, but little checkers for inclusive language and stuff like that too, right?
Yeah, so that's a project called Retext Equality. It's a very old project. The name isn't perfect, but it kind of, the gist, makes sense. And that's used inside Alex. And Alex is kind of the famous thing that people know. And what Alex tries to do is help you check your text. Whether it's inclusive and whether there are some words that you haven't thought about, but maybe there are better alternatives. And a simple example is simple. Like if you write simple in your blog post, like just write this simple line, like the gist and the simple are maybe simple for you, but for a lot of other people, especially if they're Googling for like how to do this thing, well, apparently it isn't simple, and it's apparently not just a line. But it's also, checking for master, slave, and stuff like that. And it's, that's gets a lot of attention from a lot of people that also aren't super good at programming. And like, I'm another white guy, so I am definitely not the person to decide whether these words are to be included or not. But a lot of people like suggest things there. And there are a couple of people that like find a source and then add those terms. I also sometimes use that. I use that on the Unified website itself for the articles to make sure that I don't write just or other things.
And what's cool is that you, whether you want to use Alex or not, which definitely give that a look, you can make your own list of words that, like, at this company, we just don't use these words because it refers to our ex-founder and he's mean, or I don't know, like, whatever you want it to be. Like, that's the cool thing about this, is that you can build your own things to just make this tool do what you want it to do. And plugin systems are notoriously difficult to create and to work with. But I've never felt any friction working with a Remark plugin system. Any plugin that I've written, it's not been, I haven't felt like I've been fighting with the plugin system, which has been really quite nice.
Oh, that's great to hear. Yeah, that's awesome.
Cool. Well, we're coming down on our time now. What is there anything else that you'd like to mention before we wrap up?
Nope.
Perfect. Okay, so we do have homework for folks. We want you to write your own plugin, but that's kind of a big ask. And so all that we want you to do is to go to astexplorer.net. That's astexplorer.net, and spend a few minutes playing around. So there, AST is short for abstract syntax trees. And there are a bunch of, parsers available on there. So you can look at Markdown, but you can also look at JavaScript and TypeScript and CSS and HTML. Like, there's everything. There's even like SQL and all sorts of stuff. It's big. It's really, really cool. And Remark is on there, of course. Just play around on there for a few minutes. And actually, just spending a few minutes on there will hopefully make it seem less scary to you. That it did for me. It was like, oh, okay. So it's just like, I've got some code over here and some magical thing turns it into this JavaScript object, and okay, that's I can work with objects. But then once you're done with that, then I have a blog post called "Write Your Own Code Transform for Fun and Profit," and you can follow along in that blog post to write your own Babel macro, which is also supported in AST Explorer. And Babel macros are it's a project that I created that makes it a lot easier to write code transformations for JavaScript. So we just want you to play around with ASTs and see that there's more to them than you think, but they're also not as magical as you think. It's all just JavaScript at the end of the day. So anything to add there?
No, that's perfect. And just there are so many possibilities. It's really cool what you can do with ASTs. It can really help your like day. Yeah.
Absolutely. And another thing that I've noticed when working with ASTs is that it makes me a better programmer because I understand what my syntax is actually means. And so I say, oh, okay, so this is an expression. So I can actually stick that right here and I don't have to worry about making a variable out of it or whatever.
Right.
So it's pretty cool. All right. Hey, thanks everybody. It's been a pleasure. Titus, what's the best way for people to connect with you?
You can follow me on Twitter at @WOORM, so triple O, worm. And I'm also under the same name and that same penguin on GitHub. I have more followers on GitHub than on Twitter. So like, yeah, follow me on GitHub. And if you enjoy my tweets on Twitter, both are fine, or not, also fine.
Very good. Cool. Well, hey, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to chat with you. We are going to do another episode. So if you're listening to this in order, then your next episode should be another interesting one with Titus. We're going to talk about native ESM, which is a topic that's been causing me a lot of pain recently.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun. So we'll see you all in the next one.
Awesome.